the Sefer names through Parsha Frameshir for Parshas Tzav, we will look at the Sefer Minchas Pitim by Rav Meir Arik. Rav Meir Arik lived from 1855 to 1925. He was a posdik in Buchach, Ukraine. He was a well-known student of Rav Shalom Shwadron. And actually, following the death of Rav Shwadron, the Belzer Rav directed all halachic questions, or instructed others to direct many halachic questions to Rav Arik. During World War I, he fled to Vienna, Austria. When he returned, he was the chief rabbi of Tarnów, Poland. And some of his most famous students include Rav Reuven Margolios and Rav Meir Shapiro. He wrote many svarim. He wrote the Tal Torah on Shas Bavling Yerushalmi, the Minchas Kenaos on Maseches Sota, Shas and Shuvos Imre Yosher, and the Minchas Pitim on Shulchan Aruch. And his Sefer Minchas Pitim on Shulchan Aruch is quoted by all the major poskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Vadi Yosef, Rav Breish in the Chalkos Yaakov, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach in the Minchas Shlomo. So this is a very widely accepted Sefer. Now the phrase Minchas Pitim comes up in Parshas Tzav in Perek Vav Pasuk Yedalid when the pasuk says Al Machavas Bashem and Teasa Mirkevet Mirveches to Vienna to Fine Minchas Pitim. You should make on a pan with oil, scalded. You should bring it. Repeated bakings. Minchas Pitim, a meal offering of crumbs. Takriva Rech Nichoach LaShem. So what does it mean Minchas Pitim, a meal offering of crumbs? So Rashi says that the bread requires crumbling into pieces, but not actual pieces and crumbs, since it's not subject to scooping. Rather, you fold the bread and then you fold it again. It doesn't actually separate. So Rav Arik, in his Hakdamah to Minchas Pitim, writes that the reason why he called his Sefer on Shulchan Aruch Minchas Pitim is because the information in the Sefer are like little pieces of bread that he's laid out on the Shulchan Aruch, meaning the Shulchan Aruch, which is the body of Halacha, is called the Shulchan Aruch, the set table. So he notes that the table's already been set by the Rishonim and the Achronim, and he's not looking to reinvent the wheel. He's merely looking to put on the table some pieces of bread, and hopefully that could be ma'orer, greater learning. It's interesting that on the bottom of the page of the Hakdamos to the Minchas Pitim, there's a notice, there's a modah that says that any time Rav Arik uses the word akum, it's referring to the goyim of previous generations who had no connection to Amunah, to Hashem, but not so are the goyim living in that time who we wish the best to. So clearly there was a concern that the Sefer would get into the wrong hands and perhaps there would be some anti-Semitism. So they made it very clear that any time there was anything said about goyim, it was referring to goyim of old and not the goyim that lived at that time. Rav Meir Shapiro, who we noted was one of the most famous Talmidim of Rav Arik, quotes a very interesting explanation that Rav Arik has in Parshas Korach. So when Korach and his men are arguing with Moshe and Aaron, so they attack and they say, how could you appoint Aaron? It's nepotism. And Moshe responds in Parshas Korach, Perek Tet Zayin Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'Aaron Mahu Kisalinu Alav. And what is Aaron? That you rail against him, that you chastise him. So on the surface, that pasuk, what does it mean? The Aharon Mahu. What is Aaron? What do you mean, what is Aaron? Their claim was that he's your brother, you should give it to someone else. So Meir Shapiro quotes from Rav Arik the following explanation. Because the Gemara in Erevin, and Da Samahemud Bez, says that you can see who a person really is through three things. Bekiso, Bekoso, Ubekaso. When it comes to kiso, his pocket, his money, his wallet, how a person acts when it comes to money. Bekoso, his cup of wine, how does a person act when he becomes intoxicated? And number three, bekaso, how does a person act when he becomes angry, when he becomes inflamed, when he has a reason to get angry? So when it came to Aaron, the options were limited as to how you were really to get to know him. Bekiso was not an option because money was not a factor in the Midbar. Each person received a set amount of mun each day. So there was no way to tell how Aaron behaved strictly by looking at how he handled money. The koso also didn't apply to Aaron. Aaron was a Kohen. He had to do the Avodah, and therefore he could not drink wine. So it was unclear how Aaron acted through his koso, through his cup. So the only litmus test to determine if Aaron was a mensch was Bekaso, if he would get angry when he had a reason to. And that, says Rav Arik's pshat, is what Moshe says to Korach. That if you have a problem with Aaron, v'aharon mahu, you want to know how Aaron is, you want to know if he's a mensch or not, if you want to know him, ki salinu alav. Start a fight with him. Try to get him angry. It's not going to work. Then you will see how he handles himself, understand what a tzaddik he truly is, understand why he's the perfect fit for a position of leadership. Something very interesting I saw quoted is that in the year 1914, during World War I, it's recorded in several Svarim that Rameir Arik and other Gaonim put out kol kores in many locations to strengthen Avodas Hashem during wartime. And different kabbalos, different hanhagos people should take on. One of those kabbalos was that during Shas Melchama, during World War I, a person should be extra stringent, make sure not to kiss the tefillin shel rosh before putting it on his head due to a chashash hefsik. Because one puts on the shel yad, makes a bracha. One puts on the shel rosh, makes a bracha. But it's really all considered one mitzvah. So one shouldn't kiss the shel rosh before putting it on his head. So it's very interesting that that was what one hanhaga that they chose. And the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Chav Ches, Siv Gimel, quotes a Midrash Chachamim to actually kiss one's tefillin when putting them on and taking them off. And the Mefarshim explain that's due to the concept of chivuv mitzvah, to show how much we love mitzvah. So you see that kissing the tefillin really is part of the practice of putting on tefillin. That being said, there clearly is some level of hesek that's prohibited between the shel yad and shel rosh. For example, Ravad Yosef and Yabia Omer Chelek Hay points out that after one puts on a shel yad, he should not put his shirt sleeve over his shel yad before putting on a shel rosh, as the maisa of pulling down the sleeve of his shirt would be a hefsik between the shel yad and shel rosh. But what about kissing the shel rosh? We saw you can kiss it, but it doesn't say, Shulchan doesn't say when to kiss it. Presumably, maybe it was before you even took it out of the box. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, in Igros Moshe, Arachayim, Chelek Dalid, Simen Yud, addresses this question of whether one is permitted to kiss the shel rosh before putting it on. He notes that on the surface, one could say it should be usur for the following reason. Well, on the surface, you could say it should be mutter for the following reason. Sorry, because we wrap the straps of the shel yad before we put on the shel rosh. So why are we allowed to do that? I mean, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that one should put on the shel yad, make the bracha, do one wrapping to tighten it, and then put on your shel rosh, and only then wrap it 7 times. So apparently there's no issue of being mafzik with any action between the bracha of the shel yad and the shel rosh. Even though the Magen Avraham does note that our minhag, based on the Arizal, is we do the 7 wrappings of the shel yad before putting on our shel rosh, because we view it as part of the mitzvah. So that machlokes about wrapping the 7 times before the shel rosh is really a local machlokes as to whether those wrappings are part and parcel of the mitzvah or not. So Rav Moshe says, we should say in Lamdus that one should not kiss the shel rosh before putting it on, as it could be the 7 wrappings of the shel yad, that's part of the mitzvah. But who says kissing the shel rosh is part of the mitzvah? So one shouldn't do it. However, Rav Moshe concludes that logically he thinks that the kissing the shel rosh would not be a hefsik. Why? He says, it doesn't take up any time. It doesn't delay putting on the shel rosh. As one is lifting up the shel rosh to his head, he does a quick kiss. It doesn't take any time. Therefore, according to Rav Moshe, although in Lamdus it could be, like Rav Arik put out a kol kore, that it should be a problem, Rav Moshe Feinstein paskins that one may kiss the shel rosh before putting it on his head.